Now it's my extraordinary honor to introduce our keynote speaker today, a man who is well known to each and every one of us. As you have probably gotten to know Secretary Vilsack, either as his role as secretary or as his role as the governor of Iowa, the chairman of the governor's ethanol coalition years ago. But everywhere he has been, he has worked every day to strengthen the American agriculture economy, revitalize rural America, and provide safe and secure nutritious food supply. Throughout his career, he has been an outspoken and passionate advocate for value-added agriculture and ethanol. Within the administration, he has been a tireless and effective voice for ethanol, beating back those misinformed about food versus fuel, securing funds for ethanol infrastructure, and accelerating loan guarantees, and other programs to encourage the commercialization of cellulosic ethanol. Mr. Secretary, on behalf of a grateful industry, I want to say thank you for all that you have done to make this industry the success that it is, and for all that you and the President will continue to do to assure the continued growth and evolution of this important industry. Please join me in giving a warm RFA welcome to the ethanol industry's strongest supporter in Washington, D.C., Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning. Bob, thanks very much. It's really appreciate that kind introduction, and I really, really appreciate the opportunity to be with you this morning. First of all, I consider it a deep honor to be here. Anytime I'm in the midst of folks who are producing for this country food, fiber, fuel, and feed, I feel honored. But I feel particularly honored to be here today because of the work that you all have done in building this extraordinarily important industry for this country. I want to begin my remarks today by thanking you on behalf of a lot of folks. I want to thank you first and foremost on behalf of the consumers of transportation fuel in this country. They may not realize it, but because of the work of the folks in this room and thousands of producers across the country and folks who work in hundreds of ethanol production facilities, when they go to the gas station, even though prices are up, they're probably spending on balance about $1 a gallon less than they would were it not for the work of the folks in this room. So we owe ethanol producers in this country a debt of gratitude because we're paying less at the pump because of what you do. I want to thank you on behalf of the over 400,000 individuals who are employed in part either directly or indirectly as a result of the work of the producers in this room. When you produce this renewable fuel for the United States and for others, you help to create opportunities for folks to build plants, to work in plants, to transport materials to plants, to transport materials from plants, to produce the equipment that allows you to produce ethanol and renewable fuel. There are literally hundreds of thousands of people employed today as a result of what this industry has done. And they owe you a debt of gratitude. I want to thank you also for helping this country to experience something last year that we hope to be able to replicate over the years to come, and that is a significant trade surplus in agricultural production. You all helped us, as a result of your work, reach a record amount of ag exports last year, $136.4 billion worth of agricultural products moving out of our shores to other locations across the world. Every $1 billion of ag sales generates 8,400 additional jobs at home. And this record export opportunity gave us a trade surplus in agriculture. It's not something that you often hear Americans talk about when it comes to trade. We're often talking about deficits and rising deficits or lowering deficits. But in agriculture, we have had an historic surplus. But last year, because of the enormous work of American farmers and ranchers and growers, and those who use what we produce to make extraordinary things like renewable fuel, we were able to have a trade surplus of over $42 billion. That's 8 times what it was just 5 years ago. So I want to thank you on behalf of all of those who are benefiting from export opportunities and the jobs that they create because of your work. I want to thank you because you also were in large part responsible for a record income year for agriculture and for farmers across the country. In 2011, farm income for the first time exceeded $100 billion net farm income. Even if you adjust those numbers for inflation, this is the best farm economy we have seen in over 4 decades. And make no mistake about it, one of the principal reasons we're seeing this strength is because you all have figured out this new value-added opportunity called renewable fuel. And that means opportunities for folks in rural communities who are not necessarily connected to a farm, but whose livelihood depends on the farm. As a result of your work and the strong agricultural economy, in part, we also have experienced a reduction in our unemployment rate in rural America at a faster rate than any place else in the country. So I have a lot to be thankful for today, Bob, to be here today, and I know that I need to thank every single one of you for the contributions you all have made. And since most of you in this room are also producers, let me thank you for 2 additional opportunities that I have as an American because of you. We had an opportunity at breakfast this morning to talk a little bit about various aspects of this industry, and during the course of it, it was pointed out that Americans have something that very few people in the world have. In fact, I would be willing to argue we might be the only country in the world that can say this. And that is that we have the capacity, because of the enormity and productivity of American agriculture, we have the capacity to essentially feed ourselves. We have this concept of food security, which is often taken for granted by the 98% of Americans who do not farm, that we really don't have to import anything to survive. Virtually every other country around the world has to rely on someone else for their food supply. And that's an enormous thing we take for granted every single day in this country. Now, others may have access to minerals and things of that nature that we need for our businesses. But at the end of the day, no one can work, no one can do their job particularly well if they've not been fed. And we have the capacity in this country to feed ourselves, food security, and that allows us to be a stable nation. Not only do we have food security, but because of the extraordinary productivity and efficiency of American agriculture and the food processing industry we have in this country, when we walk out of a grocery store, we have more money in our pocket as a percentage of our income than anybody else in the world. We spend less than 10% for our food in this country, less than 10%. In most other developed countries, you're going to spend 15, 20, 25% of your paycheck. And in developing nations, you're going to probably spend 50% or 75% of your paycheck. We walk out with more money in our pocket, which means we can make decisions to buy a nicer car, to live in a bigger home, to take a vacation, to put money aside for college education for our children, to maybe put a little more into our retirement program. We have that extraordinary flexibility because of American agriculture. And those two things are often underappreciated. Every speech I give, I want to make sure that people in this country understand and appreciate that. So we know that agriculture is important to this country. We know that it is integral to our national security and to our stability. We know that the renewable fuel industry and the ethanol industry is important to a strong agricultural economy. So the question is, how do we continue this opportunity? How do we grow it? Well, USDA has been active and involved in this. We've been a partner with RFA. We've been a partner with the ethanol industry. Let me just briefly review for you what we've done in the last 3 years. One thing we've done is to create 5 virtual research centers across the country. We have relationships between our own internal researchers at the Agricultural Research Service and those at universities and in the private sector in five areas across the country, trying to identify additional feedstock opportunities for the production of renewable fuel and more efficient ways and more efficient production systems. So we are hard at work to try to determine the next great idea in this industry. We have invested and will continue to invest under the 2008 Farm Bill resources that will allow us to help biorefineries that are looking at cellulosic ethanol and other production processes to get started. We've already made five loan guarantees of several hundred million dollars. We'll continue that process until our authority is exhausted. We expect and anticipate that we'll probably have 8 to 9 plants that are approved by the end of this process. We are working with 235 producers of advanced biofuels to assist them in defraying some of their expense under the 2008 Farm Bill Energy Title. We have identified 50,000 acres of land across 9 project areas to use non-food feedstock opportunities to supplement what we do with corn-based ethanol. We continue to encourage producers across the country through our REAP program to embrace renewable energy opportunities, and we've also used the flexibility in that program to encourage the production and distribution of more flex pumps or blender pumps so that people are in a position to access this fuel more conveniently. And we have worked with our sister agencies, encouraging the EPA to take action on E15, which we are thankful they have done, and we would make this pitch to all of you. Please register as soon as you can. Let's make sure that our marketers, our petroleum marketer friends, know that E15 is available, and we're anxious and interested in providing that to people across the country. If we're worried about the Straits of Hormuz, if we're worried about Iran, one way we can be less stressful about this is getting E15 in the tanks of cars across this country. So I encourage you all to register as quickly as you can, and I'll encourage my sister agency to approve those applications and those registrations as quickly as they can. E15 is important. It's also important that we maintain the renewable fuel standard. Make no mistake about this. Make no mistake about this. Just because it's in the law doesn't mean it'll always be in the law. There are people, because of the success of this industry, because of the extraordinary work that you've done over the last several decades to grow and expand this industry, you've gotten the attention of the oil industry, no question about that. And now there are very interesting and subtle ways of folks beginning to talk about the renewable fuel standard, raising the question, do we need it? Should it be changed? Should it be expanded? Should we include other aspects? We need to make sure we maintain this renewable fuel standard. It is important to the security of this country that we move towards that 36 billion gallon mark. It's important that we have less reliance on foreign oil. As a result of this industry, in part, we have gone from importing 62% of oil in this country to less than 50%. That's headed in the right direction. It needs to continue. And the renewable fuel standard is important and key to maintaining that. We also need to begin to better market the benefits of this industry. You know, we've had to play defense a bit, and it's been a very concerted and very organized effort here to undermine people's confidence in this industry. First, it wasn't you weren't energy efficient, and then we said, well, wait a second, the new tests indicate that our energy efficiency is actually better than petroleum. Then it was food versus fuel. And I, wait a second, how can that possibly be? When farmers only get 16 cents of every food dollar, who gets the other 84 cents? It's people who package, process, refrigerate, store, transport. All those people use what? Oil. When oil goes up, food prices go up. It's not us. Not us. It's important to push back on all of those myths. But it's also important to have a positive message about this industry. It's also important to inform consumers that they have choice at the pump and they're paying less at the pump because of this industry. It's important to emphasize to folks that there are people employed, working, taking care of their families because of this industry. And that as we move towards 36 billion gallons, more people will be employed, more choice will take place, gas will be less expensive than it would otherwise be. It is really, really important for us to market this. And it's important for us to recognize the national security implications of this. We need to repeat this over and over and over again. Why? Because 98% of America does not farm. 98% of America is generations removed from the farm. They don't understand how difficult farming is. They don't understand what farming is all about. They just simply enjoy the benefits and fruits of the labor of farmers and ranchers and growers across this country and take it for granted. We've got to make sure folks understand and appreciate how important agriculture, renewable fuel industry is to their future, to their children's future, to their grandchildren's future. And if we don't talk about it, who will? Who is going to explain to my grandchildren why their life is so much more stable in this country than any place else in the world because bellies are full and people are employed? Who's going to make that link between that level of comfort that we enjoy in this country and the hard work of farmers, ranchers, and producers and the hard work of those who create value-added opportunities like renewable fuel? I can't stress this enough, how important it is for us to market what agriculture does to this country. I want to take some questions, but let me finish with this. As important as all of this is that I've just talked about, as important as employment opportunities, solid, strong income for farmers, less costly gasoline and fuel, more opportunities in rural America, as important as all of that is, what's really at stake here is a value system. An important and fundamental value system that makes this country just a little bit different than any other place in the world. And it starts with agriculture. It starts with folks who live in rural communities. Because, you see, you not only provide food for this country, you not only provide fuel for this country, you not only provide all these benefits we've talked about this morning, but rural America provides a disproportionate number of people in the military. Rural America represents 16 to 17% of today's American population, but 40% or so of American military is from these small towns and these farms and these ranches and these producers' families. Almost 2.5 times more than the population. Why is that? It's because kids in rural areas grow up with a value system. It starts with an understanding that every farmer and grower understands, which is that you can't keep taking something from the land. You got to give something back. You got to replenish it from time to time. Otherwise, it will stop furnishing crops. That's a very important lesson, that you got to give something back. So kids, as they grow up with that value system, understand and appreciate, it's my responsibility to give something back, not just to the land, but to my country. When Bob mentioned I was governor of Iowa, and I tell this story from time to time because I think it just illustrates it. When you're the governor, you have a lot of great opportunities. You have an opportunity to advocate for the renewable fuel industry, which I did. But you're also the commander-in-chief of the National Guard. And when you're the commander-in-chief of the National Guard, especially at a time of war, you see these young men and women leave their families at these going-away ceremonies, knowing that they will be gone for months, and some may not come back. And when you're the governor, you basically have to reach out to folks and you have to express sympathies and condolences when people don't come back. So I tell you the story of one family. The fellow's name was Bruce Smith. He was a sergeant in the National Guard. He'd been there for about 20 years. He was from a small town in eastern Iowa. And he left his wife and two children, and he went off to Iraq. I think this was his third tour of duty. He went off and he was a helicopter pilot, and his job was to ferry troops from one part of Baghdad to another. This was during the period of time when you couldn't drive the streets of Baghdad for fear that you'd get blown up. So we would literally fly people. Bruce was on a mission one day. There were 30 or 40 people in a helicopter that he was ferrying, and a handheld missile hit his helicopter. And as it was explained to me by the adjutant general when he told me about Bruce's passing, he said from what they could tell that Bruce and his co-pilot had a split-second decision to make. So that chopper was going down. He had still had some maneuverability left, and the question would be whether or not the chopper would go down in a way that Bruce and his co-pilot would be put at greater risk.
but maybe somebody on the back of the helicopter would survive, or whether it would be the reverse, the folks in the back would be placed at greater risk and Bruce and the co-pilot would be safer. Bruce did what he was taught to do. He did what rural folks do all the time. He knew it was his duty, his responsibility to try to save people on that helicopter, and that's what he did. And he and his co-pilot died, but 17 people lived. 17 people lived. I had to call his wife. And I called Mrs. Smith, and I said, Mrs. Smith, this is Tom Vilsack. She said, Governor, I appreciate your call. And we started talking, and I realized how difficult this conversation was. And what do you say to someone who just found out within the last 48 hours that her life has been turned upside down, the man she's loved for 20 years is gone, and she's going to have to raise two beautiful children by herself, and she just has a high school education? And what do you say? Talk about thoughts and prayers. Talk about sacrifice for country. You talk about all of those words that are important, but you realize that there's no way you can convey anything that would express to this woman how difficult life is going to be for her. About halfway through the conversation, I'm in mid-sentence, and she said, you know, Governor, I've got this figured out. And I thought, how amazing, how extraordinary. I figured out. She said, yeah, I've got it figured out. She said, the way I've got it figured out, those 17 people who lived that day needed Bruce more in that split second than I will need him for the rest of my life. When you think about Bruce and Mrs. Smith, you think about a guy that didn't hesitate to go across overseas to leave his family, his friends, his community, his job, his area of comfort, his comfortable, stable life, to go off to a place that was extraordinarily dangerous, to put his life on the line. Why did he do it? Because he was taught to do it in these rural communities. He was taught that you had to give something back. And why is it that his extraordinary wife had the strength to be able to say, I have it figured out? Because she knew and understood that this country requires extraordinary sacrifice from time to time in order for us to continue to have what we have in this country, which is unique and special. A place where you can think and dream and innovate and create, that you can risk it all, that you can profit, and that you can benefit your friends and neighbors with cheaper gas and more jobs and food security. This is a great country, folks. But it's only a great country because the heart of it, the soul of it, in these rural areas, continues from generation to generation to generation to carry on those values. So as important as this industry is to our national security, to our economic security, to the ability to take care of our families, as important as all that is, it is also important to preserving that value system. It's worth fighting for. It's worth advocating for. It's worth making sure that the opponents do not win as they try to take the public away from this industry. So I'm here today to thank you for what you all have done and to make sure you know that at the USDA you have people who understand and appreciate not just what you do for us in fuel, but what you do for us every day in preserving a value system that makes this country great. Thank you very much.